Hello, I'm Chris LeBlanc. This is number 0471, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0471. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet mystery thriller author Paul D. Marks, and he'll talk about his latest book entitled Broken Windows, which takes place in the 90s and deals with racism and immigration in California.
I didn't really plan it. It just kind of happened to work out that what was going on back then in California seems to be going on in the country as a whole today. And I think, in a sense, that the book, even though it's a mystery thriller and not a serious study of these things, it gives us a way to look at current events through the prism of the past.
Sandy Harding is the general manager of the last remaining Blockbuster video store in the United States, which is in Bend, Oregon.
I think Bend is just really special. We get a lot of tourists. We have a lot of people. It's one of the fastest growing areas in the United States. We have a lot of people moving into the area that are super excited that we're here. And, you know, on a regular basis, we probably set up 2 or 3 accounts a day. And so now with all this added hype, it's definitely pushing us up over that next level.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Now that Trump's fixer Michael Cohen, the owner of many taxi medallions, has pleaded guilty, cabbies are thrilled with the prospect of him going to jail.
There's about 50,000 taxi drivers in New York City driving 13,000 yellow cabs, and I can tell you that 49,999 are hoping this guy goes to the slammer for a long time.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0471 was Chris LeBlanc, who is the afternoon drive professor at Joule 106.7 FM here in Montreal. Thank you very much, Chris, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A man who pushed 15 hard-boiled eggs up his rectum had to undergo emergency surgery after tearing his intestines. The 29-year-old man had taken GHB, commonly known as the date rape drug, when he made the decision and began to boil the eggs with his partner. The man from the Netherlands has not been identified due to privacy reasons. According to Dutch magazine for healthcare, when the eggs were ready, he peeled them and inserted them all into his anus. When he began feeling unwell, he took himself to the hospital, where doctors discovered he had a rapid heartbeat and rapid breathing. The doctors suspected abdominal sepsis and performed a CAT scan, which showed a perforation of the pelvic colon and giant amounts of air and fluids in his abdominal cavity. That's when surgery became a necessity. The doctor says the eggs were removed as well as we could, and the abdominal cavity was thoroughly rinsed. The eggs caused a giant rupture of the gastrointestinal wall, which was sewn up by the doctors. Luckily, the bizarre drug-fueled adventure ended well for the patient, as he is expected to make a complete recovery.
It doesn't take a whole lot longer than 30 seconds to enjoy eggs for breakfast. Have eggs instead.
In the future, he might want to stick to powdered eggs. A woman has used the Tinder dating app to prank more than 100 men into showing up for a date that turned out to be a Hunger Games-style competition. The woman, identified as Natasha Aponte, invited dozens of Tinder contacts to meet her in Manhattan's Union Square on Sunday for what they thought was a one-on-one date. Instead, a woman who says she was Natasha told them they had to compete for a date with her. She disqualified the men who were under 5'10" and those named Jimmy, a name she dislikes. Then she asked the remaining contestants to perform push-ups and foot races. The stunt reportedly was videotaped by Rob Bliss, the man who shot a widely watched catcalling video in 2014. You know, the remaining guys who showed up, who actually competed for the date by doing push-ups, are the ones who in any kind of relationship will be the pushovers. A 72-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of waving a gun at a high school dance in Arizona because he didn't like the loud music. Police in the small southeastern Arizona town of Thatcher say Robert Layton drove to the high school parking lot around 11:45 p.m. Friday and complained about the loud music. Witnesses say Layton pulled a 9mm handgun out of his pocket and waved it around before pulling wires to dismantle the music. A DJ at the event wrestled Layton to the ground and disarmed him.
Last night a DJ saved my life. Last night a DJ saved my life. Yeah.
Authorities later said there were no bullets in the handgun. Layton underwent an evaluation at a hospital before being booked into jail. You know, while he's in jail, they can put him in a room to sit and watch the movie Footloose on a loop. He might enjoy that. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 36-year-old Alan Miller McCarty watched most of his trial Thursday morning behind one-way glass in a small room after yelling at, interrupting, and crudely insulting the presiding judge. By mid-afternoon, McCarty was found guilty on all charges related to his threats to kill another judge who ruled in an earlier custody case involving McCarty. The jury of three women and three men took about 30 minutes to find McCarty guilty of two counts of threats or extortion and two counts of corruption by threat against a public official. Besides threatening the judge, McCarty also threatened a pair of 911 dispatchers in the phone calls. When the guilty verdict was read, McCarty was unusually quiet as he sat flanked by deputies. McCarty faces up to 40 years in prison when he is sentenced by Circuit Judge Matt Foxman. McCarty also faces more charges since he is also accused of calling the Stewart Marchman Act Behavioral Health Care and threatening staffers there. Now, if you want to hear most of what McCarty says in all of his glory in his court appearance, you can go to the Stuff File page on Facebook and watch the video again in all of its glory. And I warn you now, there is some explicit language contained in the video. You know, after watching the video and listening to his rants, I think you'll come to the same conclusion that I did. How the heck did it take a jury of six 30 full minutes to convict this guy? In that time, you'd think they would have come to a conclusion and still had ample time to order in and eat a full course meal. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Paul D. Marks is a mystery thriller writer. He's now released his third novel entitled Broken Windows, which is the sequel to his Seamus Award-winning thriller White Heat. Broken Windows is a mystery that deals with race, racism, and immigration. Those are a few topics that have been in the news lately. Paul joins us on the line right now from Los Angeles. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. You've written this book now, which seems to have themes in it that, quite frankly, are in the news that way. Is that something that you planned, or was that something that happened?
I think it was a little bit of both, maybe. Broken Windows is the sequel to White Heat, and White Heat takes place in 1992. Broken Windows takes place in 1994 when California had a proposition on the ballot called Prop 187 that was very notorious in its time and very anti-immigrant. And I didn't really plan it. It just kind of happened to work out that what was going on back then in California seems to be going on in the country as a whole today. And I think, in a sense, that the book, even though it's a mystery thriller and not a serious study of these things, It gives us a way to look at current events through the prism of the past.
In the story that you've written, it starts off with a young woman climbs to the top of the famous Hollywood sign and jumps to her death.
Right.
When you chose the Hollywood sign, was there a point or an angle or a thought process that you wanted to get out there?
Well, I think, you know, the Hollywood sign is very symbolic of Los Angeles and of people coming to L.A. with big dreams and stars in their eyes. And so I wanted to use it in that sense, you know, and it makes a dramatic statement for somebody to climb to the top of the Hollywood sign and jump to their death. There was a woman, I believe in the 1920s, named Peg Entwistle, who actually did that. And, you know, it's just kind of a symbol of, in my book, the character whose name is Susan Karubian. It's a symbol of her broken dreams. You know, she came to Hollywood, she wanted to be a star, and she didn't quite make it. Some other bad things happened to her, and so she climbs to the top of the sign as a symbolic gesture, I guess, towards Hollywood, kind of a metaphorical middle finger.
Now, as you mentioned, this is a sequel to your previous book, White Heat, your award-winning book, White Heat. When you wrote that book, was it your idea that there would be a follow-up?
I think, you know, I saw the character as a series character, but I didn't know 100% if I would do a follow-up to it. But at the end of White Heat, while certain things get resolved, certain other things don't get resolved. So it kind of left it open for another book to come along. And as I say, they're set in the 1990s and deal with issues that were in the news then, but again, are a reflection or a precursor of what's in the news today. But yeah, I probably was thinking there might be a sequel to it, and now I'm thinking there might even be a third one, another one coming down the line.
Tell us a little bit about your protagonist.
The protagonist is a guy named Duke Rogers, and he is a guy he's a private eye, and he is a former, he's a private eye, and he is somebody that his father thinks is a screw-up. So he's trying to overcome certain things that his father laid on him. He has a partner named Jack Riggs, who I kind of see Jack. I don't know if you remember the old cartoons where there'd be like a little devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other shoulder.
Yes,
and they're looking at the character to try to do the good thing or the wrong thing. Jack is very politically correct person, and I think expresses a lot of things that Duke doesn't want to deal with. But, you know, as Duke says, I love Jack, but not all of him. Hmm. And I think Jack is somebody we all have in our lives. And I also like to say that even though Jack says the wrong thing a lot of times, he always does the right thing. And so Duke and Jack are a team, and, you know, they're trying to solve these cases that on the surface they don't know what the hell is going on, but eventually they find themselves in broken windows in this quagmire of immigration issues that come down with the church and the state and business, and everybody's involved, and nobody really comes out unscathed.
You set your story in the 90s. You started doing that with your first book. Is there a particular reason why you decided to go back to that time as opposed to writing in the current time?
I think when I first had the idea for White Heat, it was a lot closer to the 90s. And I wanted to, you know, comment on things in society that, you know, besides just doing the entertainment roller coaster of a mystery thriller, I wanted to be able to comment on certain things in society, and I thought that was a good era in which to do that. Like I say, a lot of the stuff that was going on back then is still happening today. So it's a way to have a little bit of perspective on what's happening today instead of dealing with it head on. And I think that's a good way to look at it. So, you know, the first book is set during the Rodney King incident, and the second book is set during 2 years later during the Proposition 187. And as we know, both these issues of racial things and immigration things are hot and heavy in the news today. But like I say, I think it gives us some perspective, you know, some distance to maybe see things that are happening today through the past.
This book is a sequel, so it's the second time people get to learn about Duke Rogers as the story progresses. As a writer, do you keep learning about your character, or do you know exactly where your character's going from the time you start writing to the time you're finished?
Well, there's two schools of writers. One is a group of people who do outlines, and another they call pantsters because they write by the seat of their pants. And I'm more the latter. I write by the seat of my pants. So, no, I don't know exactly where things might go, and I'm learning new things about Duke as I go along. Certain things are kind of there because of what's happened in the past. Like I say, his relationship with his father is not a good one, and, you know, it's caused him a lot of issues in his life. So, you know, those are things that are there, but then there's other new things and there's new characters that come into the situation that change things around or make him face things that he didn't know he needed to face or wanted to face. So, yeah, there's always something new, and it's new to him and it's new to me.
As for the plot itself, when you're writing, you say you're a seat of the pants kind of guy when it comes to characters. What about for plot itself? Do you know when you sit down where your story is going, or does that also develop in the writing process?
I would say most of that develops during the writing, and I may have a handful of handwritten notes, but I'm not, you know, like I say, I'm not an outliner. I don't think ahead. I kind of let the characters just talk and walk and see where they take me. And I think this process and requires a lot more editing than maybe somebody who outlines. But for me, it works because I just let the characters carry me away, and sometimes I have to pull them back. Sometimes they take me to places I never thought I would go, and it's, you know, it's like really neat when that happens.
Well, your previous book won the Seamus Award, so apparently it does work. The previous book being White Heat, the new one is Broken Windows. Paul, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you, Peter. I really appreciate it, and I'm glad to be here.
Paul D. Marks, author of Broken Windows. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0471, and you'll find links to Paul's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the general manager of the last remaining Blockbuster video store in the entire United States. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And we'll also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. Plus, much more Stuff File news here on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, police in Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania State Police, say that 52-year-old Evan T. Kasich of Upper Milford Township was injured on August 16th when he wrecked his motorcycle in his own driveway. Kasich sped into his driveway around 7:30 p.m. and struck a concrete barrier, causing him to be thrown from the Honda bike. He was taken to an area hospital with undisclosed injuries, and police issued a ticket for driving at an unsafe speed, again, in his own driveway. You know, they say a man's home is his castle, but apparently that still doesn't give you diplomatic immunity. And giving him a ticket in his own driveway is the literal definition of adding insult to injury. An unnamed Irish teenager's hiking outing became fodder for any number of bad punsters after the boy was hit by a falling sheep while walking in Northern Ireland's Mourne Mountains. The sheep fell from a crag on August 17th and landed on the boy, who was treated for potential injuries to his head, neck, back, abdomen, and leg. It is believed the sheep was uninjured and left the scene unaided. Punny comments on a social media post made by the Mourne Mountain Rescue Team included, "Mutton been looking where he was going. I bet he's feeling a little sheepish now. And you want to be careful on the mountains." Wow, those are all really bad. What I'd like to know is if he starts to count sheep in his sleep, does he suddenly wake up in a cold sweat? A 42-year-old British woman saw her eye doctor after experiencing swelling and drooping of her eyelid earlier this year. After performing an MRI, doctors discovered a cyst and performed surgery, during which they found a hard contact lens embedded in the eyelid. It turns out that the patient had suffered a blow to the eye 28 years ago and had assumed the lens fell out. She experienced no symptoms until the recent discomfort. You see, this is one of the reasons why I've never been a fan of contact lenses. I much prefer glasses. I could never understand the desire to literally poke myself in the eye on a daily basis. That's the way I felt about this ritual since watching The Three Stooges as a child. Yeah. Anyway, fed up with dog poop being left around, board members at a Maryland condominium complex are now relying on DNA samples to police unscooped feces. Gene Fisher, the general manager for the residence at Park Place Condominium, says she came across doggy DNA as an option when residents began complaining about unscooped poop. The Annapolis complex had tried emails, dog meetings, fines, and a security camera in the dog park. The condo association spent about $2,500, that's $2,500, folks, on pet DNA kits, and about 20 owners began providing samples. Fisher says a sample is taken if someone hasn't cleaned up after their pet. If matched, a fine will be levied along with about $90 in costs if the association decides to send a specimen to a lab for testing. Here's a simple question. Unless you've been charged with a crime, human beings can't be compelled to give a DNA sample. So how are you going to make dog owners comply? Sure, 20 dog owners have complied already, but honestly, I don't know why. I'd be more interested in finding out how many neighborhood dog owners have told that condo board where they can stick that swab. Just saying. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a man has been charged after attempting a robbery with his 2-year-old son with him. On August 5th, around 3:30 a.m., police were dispatched to the All Auto Repair Shop. At the same time, units were across the street at the 7-Eleven with a man in custody on attempted robbery charges. The owner of the auto shop said he had had a burglar alarm go off at his business, and the front door had been smashed. Police said their investigation reveals a man in custody for robbery had attempted to burglarize the auto shop. Police said he had also tried to take a 7-Eleven clerk's car keys and assaulted a second person in an unusual and unsuccessful attempt at taking his car keys as well. Police said he also tried to take the 7-Eleven clerk's car keys and assaulted a second person in an unsuccessful attempt to take his car keys as well. Police identified the man as 29-year-old Lundy Wayne Riley, and their middle name always seems to be Wayne in these stories, doesn't it? Anyway, they said he had his 2-year-old son with him during the incidents. The young boy was not injured. Riley was charged with attempted robbery, burglary, and contributing to the delinquency of a minor. You know, people always seem to want to find a way to thwart take your kid to work day. I mean, how else will they ever properly learn what daddy does for money? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? There was a time when you drove through any neighborhood in North America and you'd eventually pass at least one Blockbuster video store. But those days are gone. In fact, in the United States, there is only one remaining Blockbuster outlet. It's located in Bend, Oregon. And Sandy Harding is the general manager at that location, and she joins us on the line right now. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, I tried calling you several times in the last week or so, and every time I called your store, it was busy. So that's a good sign, isn't it?
It's a very good sign. It's a very good problem to have at the moment. Summertime is our slow season, so we tend to be a little short-staffed this time of year, and then we bulk up for the holidays. So, yeah, it's a good problem to have. We're hiring. We just hired 3 people.
Wow. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're the last Blockbuster outlet in the United States. The ones that were in Alaska closed a little while ago. Here in Canada, we lost ours, and we had hundreds of them. We lost ours probably about 7 years ago. So what makes you the survival of the fittest? What makes you the lone man standing?
Well, you know, I think that Bend is very special. You know, we were a franchise prior to all the stores closing. And so Dish Network, allowed all the franchisees to sign a licensing agreement and stay open if they opted to when they closed the corporate stores. And we took advantage of that. And we, signed that agreement and stayed open. And I think that, you know, at the time we had 5 stores when that happened. And of course, they've kind of dwindled down. We've lost a couple of leases to, you know, longer term tenants and different things. But I think Bend is just really special. We get a lot of tourists. We have a lot of people. It's one of the fastest growing areas in the United States. So we have a lot of people moving into the area that are super excited that we're here. And, you know, on a regular basis, we probably set up 2 or 3 accounts a day. And so now with all this added hype, it's definitely pushing us up over that next level.
How big is Bend, first of all? Give us an example of this, of the town or the city that you represent.
Sure. So we are a little over 90,000 people. So I think that if you included our outside areas, we'd probably be close to 100,000 people. So it's not a very big town. We're right up against the Cascade Mountains. So we have great views of probably 7 or 8 mountaintops, you know, Mount Bachelor, and we can see Mount Hood off in the distance. I know everybody knows Mount Hood in Portland, and we have the Three Sisters, and we have lots of mountains around us and lots of lakes. And so we have a lot of outdoor sports and whatnot, but it's just a beautiful area here in Bend.
Now, I hear you've been doing a lot of interviews. I even came across an interview you did with CBS. So I'm just wondering, with the news that you were the last one standing, that must draw a lot of attention, maybe even beyond the United States.
It absolutely has. In fact, I've done a lot of interviews outside of the United States. The BBC in Scotland, which was one that was very fun to talk to them. Probably the most intense 15 minutes of my life I've ever had was with an Argentina radio station. They have a beautiful language, and listening to them talk was wonderful, but they talk fast. And we had an interpreter, and it was just wonderful, and it was so much fun. But it definitely challenged me with the gap in our language.
Now, one of the things, of course, Netflix has taken a big hit into the business of videos. I mean, that's one of the reasons. But, and we can think of all the reasons why this is something that has died out. It's like you're the last person making buggy whips. So having said that, I mean, you have a clientele, you have a base. What do you attribute that to? And are you concerned that even though you might have the fans who want the videos, you might run out of the actual physical product itself?
No, I go out and buy new movies every week. And we do still have one vendor that services us out of Portland, that we get, you know, quite a bit of our new releases. But no, I'm constantly out buying movies and whatnot every Tuesday morning that you can see me out buying movies. And as far as Netflix goes, you know, that definitely played a part early on when Blockbuster closed all the corporate stores and whatnot, and we watched everyone else struggle. And I think that it's finally settled down to the point where there's room for both of us, and most of our customers have Netflix and or some type of streaming at home, but they still see the value of coming in and talking to us and you know, get out of your house and having that, you know, face-to-face interaction with someone and touching movies rather than just scrolling through your television.
Well, you talk about the value of coming into the store and talking to you guys. So what kinds of what do you look for when you are hiring? Because you say you're now in the process of hiring. It's got to be very service-oriented for you to have survived this long and be the only one surviving.
It is. And, you know, I've been here 14 years, and one of the kids that work here is my son, actually. He was 3 when I started working here, so he grew up in the store. And most of our customers know my employees that have been here a long time, and I have, you know, probably 4 or 5 employees that have been here, you know, 5 years or more. And so we know the customers know us, and they really appreciate the fact they come in and get the same service, you know, every day. And so for as far as hiring goes, you know, I look for people who like movies, but just people with very outgoing personalities who want to work, who love their job and can be, you know, little Blockbuster cheerleaders and, you know, really out there and letting people know how wonderful it is to be able to still work here.
You know, it's almost like going to a funeral and then looking at the oldest person in the room and thinking, how much longer do you have? It's a rude thing to say, but having said that, do you ever concern yourself with the fact that you're the only one standing? How much longer can you last?
You know, obviously we do, and we still have a few years left on our lease, and this location's been here since 1992, so we have a great relationship with the landlords and with the community, and people know that we're here. We've been here a really long time, and but of course, you know, when I first came to work for Ken and Debbie, I had never worked in the movie business before, and I remember Ken kept telling me, oh, we've got a couple more years left, oh, we got a couple more years left, and so at some point, I'm like, well, those couple of years are going to run out. I'm like, at what point is that couple of years gone? But, you know, with this added hype, it's the one thing that is done for us that has been fantastic is it's reminding everyone that's local that hasn't been in for a while to rent to come back and help support us so we can stay being the last store. And so with that, I think we have no plans on closing, and we're just going to keep doing what we're doing like we always have, and we'll just see what happens.
Now, somebody owns the name. I mean, the company was absorbed more or less, but you are still officially a Blockbuster. So do you deal with a home office? Is there one that still exists, or are you really an island unto yourself?
We are really all by ourselves. We do. Dish Network actually owns the rights to the name, and so we signed a license agreement. We pay them a small fee every month to use the name, but there is no Blockbuster home office. I have people calling me all the time wanting to get a hold of Blockbuster, and like, there is no Blockbuster. You have to contact Dish Network. So I'm on my own. We are out here doing our thing. We, you know, get our movies ourselves. We get our candy and our soda and everything ourselves, our supplies. We do all of that on our own. We just, like I said, give them a small amount of money every month to keep using the name.
As you are, again, last man standing, I would assume that you have become, your outlet has become a bit of a tourist attraction.
It absolutely has. And in fact, if you were here in front of the store, you would be laughing at the dead spot in our grass, because we have a beautiful grassy area in front of our store, and people have come up. We had people out there taking Christmas card photos. We've had all kinds of things going on in the store, but there's a nice path now across the grass from the last 3 weeks of people walking up to take pictures. And it just amazes me that can happen in 3 weeks.
Now, you say in 3 weeks, we're talking about between now and the time that the last other Blockbuster store, which was in Australia, closed, right?
In Alaska, yeah. So that was on
Alaska's area,
the 15th.
Yeah.
They, Yeah, in Alaska, they stopped renting, I think it was the 15th or 16th, and then they went into liquidation. So from that point on, as soon as they announced, I think it was about the 12th that we found out that they were closing. From that point on, and it went kind of national and all the media attention till today.
Now, did you guys commiserate in any way, shape, or form while they were still in existence? Did they know you? Did you know them? Did you communicate?
We didn't, like, store to store, but our owners are friends. And so, yes, we had communication with them, and I've talked to them a couple of times, but we've known of each other, and we've always had a great relationship. Alan Payne, who owns the Alaska stores, and our owner, Ken Tischer, have always been, you know, friends.
Now I wish you a long, long life as a Blockbuster video store to come, but if and when the day comes that it does close, do you ever think of turning it into a museum?
Actually, we have, and we've had lots of people call and tell us that, and, you know, that if we close, we have to turn it into a museum. And, you know, I don't know what's in store for us, or, you know, what we're going to do. I would hope that that wouldn't happen, that we could stay open for a few more years. But we'll have to wait and see. I think that right now the nostalgia is getting everybody. Everybody really loves the feeling of knowing that we're still here. Because, I mean, who doesn't have a fond memory of going into a Blockbuster store on a Friday night looking for a movie? I mean, every time anyone who comes in here and talks about it, they all smile, and it makes them all feel good. And it's across the world. And so I believe that there's a space out there for us to keep going, and hopefully it won't have to be a museum. Hopefully it'll be a store going, but if not, I definitely think there should be a museum somewhere.
Well, perhaps you should put a sign up out front saying last Blockbuster 4, and then put the circumference of the earth as the distance.
Exactly. And have Australia. There are spy stores in Australia that people don't realize are still there, that I'm not really sure what their situation is as far as with Dish Network goes, but there are still 5 there. So yeah, we definitely have to put a little globe with them on it and us.
So 5 in Australia, anywhere else you know of? Because as I said, there are none here in Canada anymore.
No, I've been trying to find, and that was hard to find out that there was 5 there. And I actually talked to an Australian journalist who confirmed that they had 5. But it's hard to find out where they are. And I actually reached out to Dish Network, and they weren't aware. They knew that they were out there internationally, but they weren't 100% sure where they were at.
So not even the Dish Network is aware.
That's
amazing.
Well, and it could just have been because the rep that I was talking to didn't know.
Right.
I'm sure there is someone there that knows.
Well, continued success. Again, I hope you have a long, long life as an outlet in Bend, Oregon. And thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, you're welcome. And you guys have a wonderful day, and come visit us.
If I'm in the area, we'll look you up. That's Sandy Harding, the general manager of the last Blockbuster video outlet in the United States, located in Bend, Oregon. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Researchers at Duke University and MIT say they've finally proven that doctors in America order more medical tests for their patients than are necessary, and they do that simply because they fear being sued if they don't. Ordering extra tests because of lawsuit fears is known as defensive medicine. Efforts to eliminate defensive medicine through legal reform are often blocked by opponents who claim that there isn't any proof it exists. But this new study now provides that proof. The researchers say that they've proved defensive medicine exists by studying a group of people no one has ever focused on before. People in the military. You see, members of the military can't sue their doctors, so researchers compared the healthcare they receive with the healthcare the rest of us receive, and they found that the rest of us do get more tests. Let's be fair, that's not all they found, though. The study also revealed that patients who received extra tests were actually no better off than those who didn't. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, we are indeed joined by Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from beautiful downtown New York City. Hello, sir.
Hello, 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 live from the beautiful streets of New York.
And one of the things people keep talking about on the news these days is, of course, somebody who owns a lot of taxi medallions. I'm talking about Michael Cohen, who just pleaded guilty recently in court. What are they saying in the cab industry, and what are they saying as passengers in your cab about this?
Well, the passengers in the cab are not as aware of the taxi connection, but every taxi driver in New York City is, because it presents an unbelievable conflict with the Taxi and Limousine Commission, and also, by the way, the FBI. There have been so many complaints against this guy and his partner through the years about the things that they do in the taxi industry. In other words, on the side, he's running this taxi business in addition to whatever he was doing for Trump. And it finds, you know, it's the kind of thing that everybody's kind of curious about, the fact that the FBI was never interested in this guy until, of course, there was the Trump connection. Now they're very interested in him. And the reason the FBI got involved in it but didn't get involved in it is that there were many complaints made to the Taxi and Limousine Commission about him. Nothing was done. Then complaints were made to the New York City Police Department. Nothing was done. So people felt, at least in the past, I don't know about in the future, that your last resort is to go to the FBI. And then, of course, what everybody ran into was the FBI didn't care. Now, of course, they do care, so it's going to be interesting to see how it develops. There's about 50,000 taxi drivers in New York City driving 13,000 yellow cabs, and I can tell you that 49,999 are hoping this guy goes to the slammer for a long time.
Well, speaking about taxis, I know it's something we touched on the last time we spoke, but I want to bring it up again because you touched on it on your website at gabby.com, and that is basically the cabbie crunch, the fact that taxi cabs are harder and harder to operate because of the daily costs. And it's harder and harder for cabs to earn money these days. And it's added to the suicide rate for cab drivers in New York.
Yeah, it's an absolute disaster. New York City limited the number of taxis to about 13,000. And if you wanted to get a new medallion, you had to buy it from somebody who already had one. And the value of that medallion would be $1 million. I mean, it was like a money machine. Money, money, money. Uber comes along and adds, by the way, Uber is a brand name. It could be Lyft or any other name. So I'm just for the moment using Uber just as an example. Okay, the city, through some, I don't know, crooked deal, allows them to add 65,000 cabs to the city of New York. So, you know, you got 13,000, now you got another 65,000. Nobody's making any money. As a matter of fact, some MIT survey or examination of the whole project said that the average cab driver in New York City is making $3 an hour. And what's happened is that many of them are just so burdened by debts, not to mention the cost of buying a medallion, that there have been so far this year 6 suicides. Now, admittedly, when somebody commits suicide, it's not just because of one reason, but it's certainly an indication of something or other. So what does the stupid city fathers do? Instead of correcting this terrible, terrible mistake, they've now announced that there will be no more new cabs issued. Well, we already got 13,000 plus 65,000. You know, that's like locking the barn door after the horse is gone, you know? It's a real, real mess. And by the way, congestion on the streets of New York, if I've told any of your nice listeners never to drive to New York, boy, don't ever drive to New York now. It is horrendous.
Now, speaking of Uber, I know in the past you have mentioned the fact that sometimes you have very long days, and it's difficult for you as a cab driver to, shall we say, answer the call of nature. But there's a story about an Uber driver who was caught.
Yeah, well, one of the things, and I want to be careful the way I say this because I don't want to upset any of your sensitive audience. The male cab driver doesn't have a problem. He just keeps the cup that he used for coffee in the morning. Female cab driver has a lot of problems, and that's why we don't have too many of them. So I've often said to people, you know, you can do that on a side street. Okay, fine. You can do it on a side street while you're moving, fine. But, man, you don't do it while there's a passenger in the cab. And that's what this guy did. And, of course, he got charged for this, that, and the other thing, exposing or whatever. So just if you see your cab driver in New York City anyway hanging onto a coffee cup, you might say to him, "Don't you use that while I'm in the cab."
The cup is for tips, but not the kind you think for. Think about
That's true. Very good. Very clever. Quite droll.
I want to get back to somebody else who was a cohort of the current president of the United States, only because I'm sure it's something that's talked about in the back of your cab. A woman I like to refer to as Drama Rosa. Are they talking about her in the backseat of your taxi?
Yeah. I mean, she's not there. See, you know, it's going so fast now. Once upon a time, you could have called me up and I would have said, "Well, Peter, this is what they're talking about." Now, there's so many things going on, it's like you get a headache in kind of keeping track. I mean, I'm changing my website almost on a daily basis because every day it's another story. Yeah, she's one of the big topic of conversations. But what happens is that somebody's a topic of conversation, and then they're gone, and then there's somebody new the next day, and the next day, and the next day. So that's why I'm recommending, if people want to keep up at least with what's going on in New York, and I'm not trying to hustle anything here, take a look at Gabby.com to know what's happening today.
So what have people been saying about Omarosa? Have they picked a side of the story? And it's kind of hard to believe which side you should believe.
Well, it's just so I understand, we're talking about the same lady, the lady who walks around taping conversations.
Yes, yes.
And by the way, I tried that. It works. If you put an iPhone, if you put an iPhone in your breast pocket of your shirt and place it to record, it will pick up anything that's said in the cab. And I never realized that before. I don't know that I'm going to start doing it, but that's a tip for people who want to start taping everything. No, they think it was kind of very sneaky and very wrong and maybe illegal because she was doing it in the White House and what have you. But, I mean, it's just a sign of the technology. Everybody's walking around with a phone that either takes pictures or records. There certainly is no privacy. Mm-hmm. Right at this moment, I'm taking a picture of you, Peter.
You mentioned earlier that there is a lot of congestion, a lot of traffic problem when it comes to driving a cab around New York City. It must be even more difficult when you have either dignitaries in town or if you're moving El Chapo from place to place.
Yeah, well, you know, he's complaining that he doesn't like... We're talking about the drug dealer, right?
Yes.
Just so we make it clear that we're not talking about his other person named with the same name. Not that there is one. But in any event, no, it's big news now, but it's going to become even bigger news once the trial starts. Right now, he's in the Brooklyn Federal Detention Center. He's going to be tried in the Brooklyn Federal Court. And I give a tour of Brooklyn, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to add to the tour the location of his tunnel. It'll be an exclusive Gabby Cabby stop.
Okay. I look forward to that. And speaking of prison, someone was caught having, as you like to say, mufky fufky in the city pokey.
Yeah, well, I mean, it happens. I mean, you know, we all pick our own occupations. You have a certain attitude if you're going to be a correction officer. I don't mean to attack all of them, but they're pretty rough people. And both in our city prisons and even in the federal prison, we've had a wave of situations where male guards were taking advantages of female prisoners. And can you imagine being a lieutenant correction officer in a federal prison, and the next thing you know, you're a prisoner in a cell for 15 years? Very foolish.
Yes, yes. But there was also the story where city officials were probing how an inmate had sex with a visitor in a Manhattan jail.
Well, I guess it's fast mufky fufky. I mean, there's no other explanation, and probably not too much. In things like that in the prisons, at least in New York City, it doesn't happen by accident. And what I mean by that is there had to be somebody who turned and looked the other way conveniently. Mm. I mean, they're pretty public places in the prison. Yeah. I mean, in all the times I've been in jail, I would like to say at this time, I've never had sex in jail.
Okay. Well, good to hear it. Before we let you go, you know, there's always a celebrity sighting, and I understand you saw The Hoff.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't say anything more than that.
Where did you see David Hasselhoff?
Well, he was walking on Fifth Avenue, and this has happened to me time and time and time again, that somebody will walk by me and I'll think to myself, gee, isn't that? And then I'll realize who it is. And then I'll look around and I'll see that nobody is paying any attention at all. And they're not trying to be blasé about it. And it was a classic example with him because he's a pretty big guy, getting older. But people don't realize celebrities in New York City because they're all dressed like you and I.
Well,
I mean, like regular people.
I'm sure there would have been a bit of a frenzy if he was surrounded by German tourists.
Yeah, and if he had been in a bathing suit, I guess.
Yes, he's huge in Germany, by the way. Huge in Germany. People can find out more information. And one of the things that's slightly different on your website these days is you keep adding new stories each and every day. So if you see something on Peter's website today, it doesn't mean you shouldn't go back tomorrow because there's something new there. People can go to Gabby.com to find out more information. And you're also still giving tours. People can send an email to find out more about them to peter@gabby.com. Peter, I thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
And thank you for saying all of the nice things. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. I do have an idiot of the day that I want to bring up in a few moments, but I got a few more Stuff File news stories that I want to share with you right here, right now. Police in Nebraska are looking for a man who exposed himself to another man while wielding a sword. The second man told police he was sitting in his car at about 4:30 a.m. after walking his dog when a naked man approached him with a sword. The naked man tapped on the driver's side window with the sword, and the driver grabbed his rifle from the vehicle, chasing the man into a wooded area nearby. Police have only a generic description of the naked man. So, if you're keeping score at home, boys and girls, please note that a clothed rifleman beats a naked swordsman. And now it's time for the Darwin File. You know what that means, boys and girls. Impatience apparently drove a man waiting for a passing freight train at a Salt Lake City railroad crossing to a rash decision. According to Lieutenant Russ Amott of the Salt Lake City Police Department, it looks like he just squatted down and tried to roll underneath it, like in the movies or something. A video of the incident shot by a nearby railroad camera shows the man, believed to be in his 30s, trying to time his move to roll between the wheels of the 15-mile-per-hour moving train, but he was caught up in the train's wheels and killed. The train operator realized something had happened and stopped the train. The man was not carrying identification, and police are trying to identify him. Based on their review of the video, police do not suspect suicide. From the video, he looks like he was just trying to get from one side to the other and became impatient, the lieutenant said. Ah, yes, the Darwin File, because the tree of life is often self-pruning. You know, this story reminds me of a conversation I had about 30 years ago. I was riding in the engine of one of those then-new LRC trains that Via Rail had just gotten, and I was talking to a particularly chatty engineer. Now, looking out ahead in the dead of night, about a half a kilometer down the track, we saw a car dart across the track. Now, as you know, these trains are big, imposing beasts that can do a lot of damage to anything it hits. The engineer shook his head and said, "I don't know why people do that. They should realize that this thing does 90 miles an hour whether you're on the track or not." Now, that's a quote I have never forgotten. Anyway, it's the time you've all been waiting for, boys and girls. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
A 17-year-old male has been arrested after police say he stole an AR-15 and tactical gear from a Palm Beach Sheriff's deputy's unmarked police car. The suspect was arrested by Boynton Beach Police late Saturday after the teen reportedly flaunted the stolen weapons and gear during an Instagram live stream while dancing to rap music. Records show the deputy reported the item stolen to Boynton Beach Police on August 14th after leaving his unmarked cruiser at a shopping plaza for a few hours. Among some of the items stolen from the cruiser were two loaded magazines, a gas mask, taser, a ballistic helmet, and rifle clips. The live stream the teenager launched gave police grounds for a search warrant. Police say detectives discovered the stolen items under the suspect's mattress. The 17-year-old faces grand theft and burglary while armed with a firearm and is currently being held at a juvenile detention center. Now, why? Oh, why would you steal weapons from a police car and then flaunt your theft by dancing with the items on an Instagram live stream? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0471. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0471. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.